This is FM 100.5 and 101.9. AM 1450, Rutherford County's place to talk. WGNS, Murfreesboro, your good neighbor station. This is The Truman Show with Truman Jones. A look at the politics, news, sports, and people that are shaping Rutherford County. Now your host, Truman Jones.
Good afternoon, Rutherford County. I want to let you know the first part of the show is brought to you by Stan McNabb. Stan McNabb Automotive provides quality vehicles from Chevrolet, Dodge, Jeep, Ford, and Cadillac to the Murfreesboro, McMinnville, and Shevable, Tennessee area. Their large selection ensures that they have a vehicle for everyone, no matter what it is you're looking for. And for a quality used car in Tullahoma, visit their dealership located at 2000 North Jackson Street. They have a large inventory of pre-owned cars, trucks, SUVs, and minivans to select from. And at Stan McNabb Automotive, they pride themselves in the quality that they offer on all of their used cars, which makes them a major destination for used vehicles. And only at Stan McNabb can you get free oil changes and tires for life. And we're bringing a little class to Rutherford County on the Truman Show. And
what was that? That was beautiful.
It was. Did you hear me playing the violin?
No, I did not.
I practiced that thing for years. I mean, just that one moment. It was really nice. I mean, I was proud of myself.
I think you better give credit where credit's due.
Well, we have Mr. Greg Tucker here and Maestro Joe Lee, and we are so tickled to have you here today. And I believe that was your orchestra.
Thank you, Truman. It's all my pleasure to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
What were we listening to?
That was the Murfreesboro Symphony. Mm-hmm. Just last Thursday, a couple Thursdays ago, mm-hmm. we had our season opener, mm-hmm. and that was our concert over at the First United Methodist Church. Mm-hmm. Murfreesboro Symphony presented a concert called Back to Basics, mm-hmm. the music of Mozart and Beethoven. And that was the opening piece, Mozart's Overture to the Marriage of Figaro, a very famous classical piece that your listeners are going to recognize, and it's been used all over the television, especially in recent years. Sort of brought a resurgence in popularity to that piece.
You know, I have very little knowledge of classical music, but I absolutely love it. I can sit and Great. Listen to it forever, not knowing at all what I'm listening to, mm-hmm. which opera it came from, and who the artist was that wrote it.
Sure.
And while I was listening to that a minute ago, it's amazing how many really great artists we have in this community. Where in the world do you get them?
You know, I think the Murfreesboro Symphony is one of the community's best-kept secrets. Mm-hmm. It's full of extraordinary musicians, most of which come from Middle Tennessee, mm-hmm. The majority in Murfreesboro, and then we have a number that come over from Nashville as well. But the musicians in this orchestra, you know, they're all professional musicians. Many of them are music teachers, mm-hmm. You know, and they still play their instrument really, really well and play in a symphony orchestra. You have lots of people that make their living playing in symphony orchestras, and Murfreesboro Orchestra is just one of those orchestras that they participate in. You have music students. We have a few graduate students from MTSU. We have a couple of recent graduates from Vanderbilt's Blair School of Music. Mm-hmm. And when I said music teachers, I'm also including music faculty over at MTSU. Mm-hmm. We have quite a few faculty members from that school of music in our orchestra, too. It's a real diverse group of people, people from all over the map, but now they make their home here in Middle Tennessee, and we're lucky to have them.
Well, we're lucky to have you, and you're the one that puts it all together. Can you give me a little bit of background on where you grew up and how you happened to be here?
Sure. How far back shall we go? We have a lot of time, right?
Not before birth, but sometime
okay.
after.
Okay. Well, I was actually born in North Alabama, Florence, Alabama.
Sorry to hear that.
I'm from Florence, Alabama originally.
That's good Southern roots.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it's a great place to grow up, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, in Florence, well, it's a small enough town where it is a great place to grow up, but also there were a lot of cultural offerings there that allowed me to sort of explore my love and passion for music at an early age. Mm-hmm. I started playing the trumpet in my school band when I was in the fifth grade. That was my first instrument. And at some point, either my mother or my grandmother found an advertisement in the school, in the newspaper, in the classifieds, that the youth orchestra in town was looking for new musicians. Well, since I'd only been playing about a year or so, I didn't know about the youth orchestra. But I went and auditioned for them. They took me. I became a part of the youth orchestra. And it was the first time I'd ever experienced playing with strings. Mm-hmm. In the school band, you know, it's woodwinds, brass, and percussion. But once I went to our community youth orchestra, it's called the Shoals Symphony Youth Orchestra, I kind of discovered what it was like to play with a full orchestra, which is basically a band including a string section, violins, viola, cello, and bass. I loved it so much I decided that I wanted to play the cello. I knew by the time I was 12 that I wanted to be an orchestral conductor, and I told my parents that I needed to learn a string instrument so I would know something about that family of the instruments. And, you know, my parents were not musicians, but they were, still are not musicians, although my dad did have a brief soiree into violin a few years ago, which we could talk about later if you want.
I love the violin, yeah.
Yeah, me too. Mm-hmm. And but they were always very supportive, and they were excited. I started cello when I was 12. By the time I was in the eighth grade, I realized that there were a lot of trumpet players and a lot of cello players out there. And while I was doing well...
I'm surprised at a lot of cello players.
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
I was doing well. You know, I was competitive with other kids, but I thought, you know, I want to get a scholarship to go away to school. I need to play an instrument that not a lot of people play. So I called my... who was going to be my high school band director. This was the summer before high school. And I said, what instrument do you recommend? What do not a lot of people play? And he said, the bassoon. Hmm. So I started when I was 14, the bassoon. I went to Vanderbilt on a bassoon scholarship. I majored in bassoon. You know, you ask people what their major is, and, you know, a lot of times they'll say English or political science. But you asked me what my major is, and I said bassoon, and I got a lot of questions.
A lot of people think that's some type of science, I'm sure, around here.
Describe the bassoon for us.
Well, the bassoon is sort of the, well, not sort of, it is the granddaddy of the woodwind family. It's a double-reeded instrument. It's about, I think when you stretch it out, all the pieces, it's about 8 feet long. It's not that long when you hold it because the pieces overlap each other.
Is it difficult?
Is it difficult? You know, I think in order to be spectacular on any instrument, it's about the same level of difficulty. You know, you sort of have to devote your life to it, or a large chunk of it. And, you know, you often hear things like the horn is the hardest instrument to play, or the oboe is the hardest instrument to play. I don't really buy into that. To be a great flute player, you have to put as much time into it as someone who's a great oboe player, if that makes any sense.
Well, it seems like the violin, though, seems to be more physical, because I sit there and watch them. It's usually ladies that are playing in the large orchestras, and by the time they get through, they are spent.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting you say that. Up until, gosh, maybe the 50s or 60s, you saw very few ladies. Orchestras were all men.
That's right.
In Chicago and New York, and especially in European orchestras. And then gradually women started becoming part of the orchestra too. But I moved to Middle Tennessee when I was 18 to go to Vanderbilt and study music, study bassoon. Also minored in voice and took cello lessons when I was there. And my senior year, the orchestra that I grew up in lost its conductor. He had left very suddenly. And I found out about this, and I'd already been studying conducting at Vanderbilt and conducted a lot of student ensembles. And I found out about this, and I called someone who I knew was very influential, and I said, look, I understand Jeff has just left. This was the Shoals Symphony Orchestra back in 1997 or so. Mm-hmm. And I said, I would love the opportunity to be the conductor while you're looking for someone. You know, I was a college student. I knew it wasn't something I could do forever, but I could certainly fill in while they were looking for someone. So I drove down there once a week on Monday nights while I was a senior at Vanderbilt, drove 2 hours every Monday night, and I was the conductor of that group. It was supposed to last about 6 months, and it lasted 2 years.
Wow.
I did that. I graduated from Vanderbilt. I was still conductor of the Shoal Symphony. Vanderbilt then hired me to stay as their assistant conductor, mm-hmm. and I coached chamber music. Mm. I conducted a lot of musicals. You and I, before the show, were talking quite a bit about some of the musicals that you like. I spent mm-hmm. a lot of time doing that down at TPAC, conducting shows for Circle Players. Mm-hmm. I taught orchestra and band in school, public and private, for 4 years. And then in 2004, I became the director of the Huntsville Youth Orchestra. And after I'd done that for about a year, I know I'm going through a lot of details here, but
it's all right.
After I'd done that for about a year, the Huntsville Symphony asked me if I would be their assistant conductor and director of education. Mm-hmm. So the director of education basically is it's a staff position that is in charge of all the educational and community outreach programs, and the Huntsville Symphony has a lot of them. So that was nearly a full-time job. I was spending a lot more time in Huntsville than I ever thought I would, but I really love that city too. But still got to do a lot of conducting as the assistant conductor. I then became the associate conductor, and last season was my first year as the resident conductor, so now I'm considered the resident conductor of the Huntsville Symphony. I direct the Huntsville Youth Orchestra. I spent last semester as the director of orchestras at Vanderbilt University mm-hmm. As a sabbatical replacement, but I am a faculty member at Suwanee. I teach the orchestra there. And I'm really proud to say I've just begun my first season with the Murfreesboro Symphony Orchestra. I'm their third music director, and we just kicked off our 30th anniversary season, so that brings us to now.
Congratulations.
You can see all the training he went through in order to be ready to be the Murfreesboro maestro.
That's right.
Now, you are the director here, uh-huh. and let me make sure I got this in chronological order.
Sure.
Are you still with some of the other mm-hmm. orchestras?
I am. I'm resident conductor of Huntsville Symphony, mm-hmm. And what that basically means, I'm not the music director, mm-hmm. and Huntsville has a fairly large season, but mostly I do pops, mm-hmm. educational performances. I conduct the Nutcracker. Mm-hmm. So it's not like I'm there all the time. You know, Murfreesboro Symphony, I am the music director. It's really at the top of my priority list. Mm-hmm. And
is this your home now?
Well, Middle Tennessee is my home. I live in Nashville.
Okay.
But it's interesting. I spend a lot of time in Murfreesboro these mm-hmm. days. And
that's a whole lot nicer than Nashville.
It is. Yeah. Am I allowed to say mm-hmm. that?
Yes.
I love Murfreesboro. Mm-hmm. The people are so down to earth, incredibly nice. And I really enjoy coming over concert weeks, weeks leading up to concerts, just to pop into the office and, help out with music or whatever I need to do, make sure everything's in order, and always find a new place to go to lunch around here. And, Murfreesboro's a great place.
I love to watch concerts because they're so intense. Mm-hmm. And looking at you, and I usually watch the maestro because he is the most interesting person in the whole group.
Because Definitely the most visual, right?
Because he's actually leading the whole thing. He's like a general up there, and he's telling each section when they're supposed to take part and all that. And I'm sure you've practiced this for endless hours or working with each group. There's just one thing. You don't have the long hair that you get to sling all over the place when your head is bobbing up and down. And do the little signs that you give each individual section, uh-huh. are those your own signs, or are just pretty much with you, or is this something across the board that most maestros are able to utilize for their particular orchestra?
Truman, that's a really great question. Being a conductor, there are hundreds of years of tradition and things that we incorporate into conducting the orchestra. Mm-hmm. For instance, if the piece is in a certain meter, then we're going to pattern our hands generally a certain way. Mm-hmm. When you bring a soloist in, when you show the phrasing and that type of thing of the piece, conducting is not all about bringing people in and telling them how loud or soft to play. Mm-hmm. Those are the types of things that we immediately think of when we think about a conductor. But it's also about providing an overall structure of the piece, mm-hmm. providing a direction for the piece, because later on in the segment, we're going to hear a little of the Beethoven's Fifth Symphony. Mm-hmm. Well, anywhere you go, that piece of music is going to sound a little bit different, sometimes a lot different. And it's based on the interpretation of the conductor and also mm-hmm. the interpretation of the musicians. So to answer your question, there are traditions that we do all bring in when we stand on the podium, but it's also highly individual, the art of conducting. And what I mean by that is whatever I conduct, it's going to sound different than what someone else conducts. And it's important to me that I don't study pieces by listening to CDs. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll if it's a new piece and something, you know, that I don't know very well, then I'll listen to a few recordings. But if you get into the habit of learning music by listening to the same recording over and over, what you're going to find is you're going to reproduce something that was on your CD player. You know, and then it loses a bit of the art.
You know, the noise level gets quite high. Uh-huh. When you're, can you discern when someone is not really keeping up, or they're not hitting the notes that they should be in that large group, or can they just remain hidden?
You know, we do all have good days and bad days.
Mm-hmm. Right.
On a good day, you know, I would say in general, yes, you know, it's very important that the conductor can hear when someone's playing a wrong note, you know, playing a pitch that doesn't
fit
into a chord.
How do you tackle that during the...
You know, I have always, what's the expression, you get more flies with honey than mm-hmm. vinegar. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm a nice person.
So you smile at them.
Yeah, you know, you...
You don't point your stick, a baton
no,
at them.
No, I don't. I've been in orchestras where conductors are tyrants, mm-hmm. and trust me, that's not the way to make the best music. Mm-hmm. You know, it's very simple. You just, you know, it's important to use their name, and you say so-and-so. It's important. I think there's a G-sharp there. And a lot of the times, it's a mistake in the part. Mm-hmm. So it's never good to sort of jump on the musician for making an error, because when you bring it up, sometimes it's obvious that, oh, well, there's a mistake in the part, and we just need to correct that, so...
You know, I don't think I'm in the minority when I talk about classical music, because I think most people love the sound of classical music, mm-hmm. but they really don't, I mean, they don't know what the words are, they don't know where the music is coming from. Mm-hmm. Is that important, or should people just kind of, is there anywhere that you can go to be able to study up on some of that?
Well, that's a good question, too. I believe the music, for music's sake, should be very entertaining for mm-hmm. people. It should be very meaningful to people. You know, we're not there just to entertain. We're there to mm-hmm. teach as well, and to, you know, just sort of provide an environment where people can be, you know, reflective or spiritual or wherever the music takes them. Mm-hmm. I personally... You know, understanding the fact that many people come into the concert hall without a lot of background as to what they're going to be hearing, mm-hmm. you know, I enjoy actually saying a little bit about the piece before we play it. Mm-hmm. You know, who composed it? When did that person live? What was the context of this work being composed? For instance, the Mozart Marriage of Figaro Overture. Mozart was 30 years old when he composed it.
Wow.
He didn't live much longer than that. Mm-hmm. It was an overture to a larger work. The opera, The Marriage of Figaro, became mm-hmm. One of his greatest compositions, one of his best-known compositions, and one of the compositions that made him some money, which most of them didn't. And that was the overture to that piece. And, you know, just sort of setting it up like that for people, mm-hmm. it gives them a frame of reference, you know. It gives them sort of a starting point, a musical appreciation-type starting point. And, you know, I did similar things with the next piece. And a lot of conductors are afraid to talk to the audience. They, you know, they don't feel like they're great talkers. And honestly, when my head's really in the music and when I'm really focused on what the music is going to be, sometimes I stumble over my words a little bit. But mm-hmm. most of the time I just try to relax and separate the talking part from the music
You mentioned education beyond actual performances. You've got an outreach program with the local schools, don't you?
We do. We have an orchestral member, one of our bassoonists, Wilson Sharp. He'll take musicians into the schools. I'm still learning more about this program, but he'll take an ensemble of musicians, generally two or three, into a school. and let those kids at the school get a little more up close and personal with the with the musicians and the music.
I'm told that over the course of the year there will be 30 schools visited by members of the orchestra as part of that outreach program, and you can see that's not only bringing education but encouraging people to enjoy the symphonies when they come about.
You know, Greg, part of the mission of a modern symphony orchestra must be education and community outreach. It's extremely important, and we can't just bring kids to the music. We also have to take the music to the kids, because there are a lot of kids that don't have the resources. Their parents just aren't aware of how important it is for the children to be exposed to the arts. And the more we can get out into the community and see those kids too, the better off we're going to be in the long run for a lot of reasons.
At your concert, I believe it was Thursday last week, we had quite a few young people up in the balcony. And what was going on is another new program just for this year, the 30th anniversary year. There is a pre-concert program which involves students and professionals, artists and musicians, and before Joe begins his performance, they'll perform and have their work out. Wow. And there was in particular the second grade class from one of the local elementary schools was there with some of their artwork, and what had been offered was the student and the parents were able to come either at a discount or maybe we gave them complimentary tickets. Mm-hmm. And it was wonderful to see the balcony where you perform full of these young people and their parents. And I bet for many of them it was the parents' first time. Mm-hmm. But every concert this season will have a pre-concert program. And it will involve one performing music group. And then there will be artists and other musicians and craftspeople displaying and meeting the people, to just kind of overall encourage a broader exposure to some of the cultural activity here in the community, program that I think we ought to be real proud of.
I am proud of that. You know, it's something, even from the first time we did it Thursday a week ago, it's something that's really clear we need to continue.
I want to let you know we're going to take a quick break and let you know that we have a new sponsor, Blue Restaurant and Bar. And met Greg Pogue a little over a week ago, went over and had a really nice lunch, and it was outside in the courtyard. What a beautiful day, and actually it would be a gorgeous day today to go over. And their location is at Jackson Heights Plaza, 810 Northwest Broad Street, Suite 22, and you can reach them on the website, blue-restaurant.com, telephone 615-410-3383. And happy hours and Blue Back Bar from 2 to 7, Monday through Friday, and Saturday from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. And Sunday live jazz brunch starting at 10 a.m. featuring music of Larry Pinkerton and Avant Lane. And they have a baby grand piano music on Friday and Saturday nights starting at 6:30. And Blue Back Bar features big screen TVs for the sports viewing. And, of course, that hits me right down the alley. Reservations are recommended but not required, and it's also a great family atmosphere. That's what they want in there. They want the families to come in, enjoy themselves. If they're interested in sports, they do have the big TVs out there, or you can just go outside. And they are available for book and private parties and events, and you can't find a better venue than that.
The Truman Show now continues on the voice of Rutherford County, WGNS AM and FM.
Is your energy bill creeping up on you? Cold weather giving you a scare? Now's the time to get your heating and air system up to par for winter weather. Perhaps you need a new system. You can get a York heating and cooling system installed in your home for as little as $99 per month and no money down. You'll be able to save that and possibly more on your energy bill. Call Precision Air at 896-2785. That's 896-2785. Or visit precisionairtn.com.
Hello, this is Jim Bryan at First Bank.
And I'm Chuck Lewis.
First Bank presents Good Neighbor Events, news of what our local schools, churches, and community groups are doing.
Well, here it is Tuesday. Did you realize that October is National Fire Prevention Month? The American Red Cross urges families to prepare for and prevent a home fire. Alarmingly, only 26% of the families have actually developed and practiced a home fire escape plan. Do you have a plan? Well, if you don't, call the Red Cross here in town. Well, it's time to get some good exercise. Find out about the Cripple Creek Cloggers. Meet some new friends and make some interesting trips. The Cripple Creek Cloggers practice tonight at 7 o'clock at First Baptist Church on the corner of East Main and Spring Street. Free adult GED classes every Tuesday and Thursday evening from 6 to 8. And child care is provided, by the way. And there are two locations. One of them at the Patterson Community Center over on Mercury Boulevard. The other one at Franklin Heights Family Learning Center on January Street. For information, call 893-5812. And this Thursday is Blackout Thursday Football. The Blue Raiders host Western Kentucky. The kickoff's at 6:30 here at Johnny Red Floyd Stadium. And yes, the game will be on WGNS. Get there early and enjoy the fun. And speaking of MTSU, this Wednesday through Saturday over at the Tucker Theater, The Legend of Sleepy Hollow, 7:30 each night. And the Fall Festival of Magic is Friday and Saturday night at 7:02 at the Center for the Arts in Uptown Murfreesboro. The tickets are on sale now at J. Mullins Jewelry and Gifts over at 352 West Northfield Boulevard. That Fall Festival of Magic this Friday and Saturday at 7:02 each night. Good Neighbor Events brought to you by First Bank.
Weather Eye.
Mainly sunny this afternoon, high in the upper 70s. Tonight, mainly clear, low near 50. Sunny on Wednesday, high of 82. Wednesday night, low near 54. I'm WGNS meteorologist Laura Lockwood. Right now, it's 75 degrees.
If you're sick, you don't go to a vet.
So let a mechanic change your oil.
Todd's Complete Auto Care on Southeast Broad.
Radio listeners get a standard oil change and full service for only
$27.95. Mr. Shelby, come in and see Mandy.
On Southeast Broad Street, across from the Discovery Center.
The local conversation continues now on The Truman Show. Once again, here's Truman Jones.
And I are listening. What are we listening to?
That's the opening of the Beethoven's Fifth Symphony in C minor.
I've heard that Beautiful. Referred to as probably the classical piece most familiar to the largest audience. And
at least they've heard. They know what the music is.
Well, to do my bit with the history here, that figured very prominently in the history of World War II.
It sure did.
We all remember Winston Churchill. Mm-hmm. At least those of us our age remember Winston Churchill. His sign was the V, the victory, and the Morse code, which was still very much in use back in the 30s and 40s, was dot, 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 dash, or if you're going to do it audibly, it's di-di-di-da, and the opening part of that Beethoven, I'm sure just coincidentally, I doubt that Beethoven knew Morse code, but does that di-di-di-da, and they played that whenever Churchill was about to be on the radio with his nightly encouragement to the people to stand fast, would play that. So all my life I've always thought of that music, not knowing what it was as a kid, as the victory music, the V.
Beethoven referred to that figure as fate knocking at the door.
Fate knocking at the door, and that's interesting.
I'm going to learn a lot today. I want to let you know that this part of the show is brought to you by At Home Care, 237 Castlewood Drive, Suite H, right behind the Kroger's on Memorial Boulevard. And if you're at home and you can no longer take care of the normal chores at home, and maybe they're looking at you going somewhere else and leaving your home, you don't have to. just give Melissa Warren a call at 713-4639 or check them out on the website, www.athomecaretennessee.com, and she can work out a program for you. And it's actually 24/7. I mean, they can come in and take care of all your needs 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And I guarantee you, you will be most happy that you were able to contact them, because they will make your quality of life a whole lot better. And
during your remarks about the Blue Restaurant, mm-hmm. which I have tried and enjoyed very much, you mentioned that Larry Pinkerton's playing
yes,
over there.
Right.
I have to say a word about that. Larry Pinkerton not only is my next-door neighbor, he's one mm-hmm. of my cousins. His grandmother wow. was a Tucker.
What does he live, about 3 miles from you? Is your next door neighbor?
Close to that. Yeah. You don't want to walk there on a hot day. But mm-hmm. yeah, he's the next farm over. Larry and his wife Gay and their group called the Eclectics will be the opening music
wow.
at the next symphony, which is October 27th. And Larry, for those of you who don't know, he's played quite a bit around the area, but in his younger days he was the lead guitarist for Skeeter Davis, traveled all over the world,
wow.
Australia and Europe. With her, real proud of him and his musical ability.
Wow. Now, what do we include in when you have the orchestra and the symphonies meet? In I think you mostly are over at the Methodist Church, right?
That's right.
And
the First Methodist Church on Thompson Lane is the performance.
First of all, how's the sound there?
You know, I'm glad you asked. The First United Methodist Church on Thompson Lane is beautiful.
Mm-hmm. It is gorgeous.
It's an incredible. Church, an incredible building, mm-hmm. and they have all of their altars and whatnot are on a raised platform, like mm-hmm. like a stage, mm-hmm. and then behind that stage you have the choir loft, and then behind that choir loft you have this enormous organ that Dennis Milnar built just a few years ago. It's got to be one of the best organs around, and behind that is a huge brick wall. And the reason I go into all that detail, when the music takes place on that stage and in the choir loft where we put the woodwinds and the brass and the percussion, that wall is like a natural shell, and it just sends the music into the congregation, into the audience, and it's a terrific sound.
That's important too, isn't it?
It is important.
The music's
absolutely.
Not the same without it.
It's a live space, and what I mean by that, acoustically, there's a bit of reverb, but it's not too much.
Mm-hmm.
The orchestra doesn't sound muddy. And actually, the Beethoven excerpt that you played just a few minutes ago, that was recorded from the back of the church.
Hmm.
So
beautiful.
Yeah, that's the sound that you're getting once the orchestra gets once all that sound gets to the back of the church. That's where they're picking that up.
Now, when we say classical music,
yes, sir.
All opera is not classical. Is that right? I think you were explaining that to me earlier.
Excuse me. You're right. You know, art music in general is considered under the umbrella of classical music. Now, classical can mean two things. It can mean, you know, art music, or it can mean music from the classical period.
Mm-hmm.
So we have four major periods in the classical period. We have the Baroque period, which was around Bach's lifetime. He died in 1750. He lived from 1685 to 1750. And then once Bach died, we started going into the classical period, which we have composers like Haydn and Mozart, two of the big names in the classical period. And then after that, we had the Romantic period, which includes later Beethoven. Beethoven actually spanned classical and Romantic. Later Beethoven is considered Romantic. We have Brahms, we have Mendelssohn.
Mm-hmm.
Schubert, Schumann, a lot of great Romantic composers, Dvorak, Rossini, we were talking about. Rossini composed a lot of opera, mm-hmm. an Italian composer, Giacomo Rossini. And it was classical music, but it wasn't from the classical period, so that can be a little confusing sometimes. And
is there any difference? They use the word genre all the time now. Uh-huh. So I think it's been the last 10 years that word has really popped up.
Sure.
Are they in different genres as you would consider it with different other musicals that you would have, I mean, in musical groups?
You know, opera in general is one genre,
mm-hmm.
and then musicals would be considered another genre. And generally, those take place in different types of places. Like mm-hmm. you have all of the New York theaters, you know, on Broadway and off Broadway, and they house the musicals. And very, very rarely will you see an opera in one of those places. Mm-hmm. Now, you also have the Metropolitan Opera just down the street. Actually, last season when I was guest conducting here, we did a concert called From Lincoln Center to Broadway, and the whole first half was opera aria, famous opera arias and instrumental selections from operas. Mm-hmm. The second half, we went down Broadway quite a few blocks to Broadway, to the Broadway theaters, and the second half was all musicals and songs from musicals. Now,
Some of the musicals you featured?
Some of the musicals were Jekyll and Hyde, Chess, Phantom of the Opera, West Side Story. Now, what's happening is, you know, a lot of those operas a long time ago, they would have been considered sort of popular music or mm-hmm. musicals of those days. So, you know, in 100 years, who knows, a lot of the musicals that we hear now could be considered operas, and they could be performed in opera houses throughout the world. You know, right now they're considered more popular music, so there's a sort of a divide. But, you know, a lot of the... I don't know if this makes sense, but a lot of the music that's considered classical music, all that really was the popular music of that time.
Operas, is it entirely musical? All the dialogue is entirely musical?
Most of the time, yes. I would say 90% of the time or more, mm-hmm. all of the dialogue is sung, which is called recitative. Mm-hmm. And the recitative is what kind of propels the story forward, and it's usually less melodic. And then when you get to the arias, that's the time for the singer to just sort of stop and sing about whatever it is.
Right.
You know, like...
That's the best part of
it. Right, exactly. Like mm-hmm. the recitative musically propels it forward, and then the arias is kind of a stopping point, and it's when, you know, you're going to hear the, for lack of a better word, the songs.
You know, they always... I'm sorry, Greg, go ahead.
Now, when someone attends the Murfreesboro Symphony Orchestra performances, uh-huh. they're going to get a good sampling of classical. But you also include a good deal of popular music, don't you? What I would call popular music in a symphonic version, big orchestra version.
Absolutely. You know, my first concert, it was actually half classical, half pops back mm-hmm. in September of 10. This past concert was all classical.
Right. But,
and the reason I wanted to do that, for the last 4 years or so, not including last year, the Murfreesboro Symphony was largely a pops orchestra, where mm-hmm. most of the concerts you would attend, you would hear a majority of pop's music. So for the community and for the musicians, I sort of wanted to take a step back, go back to the basics, and perform some of the great repertoire from the classical period.
Overview of the rest of the season. What can we expect in terms of your concerts?
Well, the second concert is actually coming up later this month. It's October the 27th. And it features a very famous pianist named Mac Frampton.
Okay.
Mac Frampton, I'll give you a little bit about him. He was at the Van Cliburn competition. He was, you know, a trained classical pianist, wonderful player. He's just really incredible. He's no stranger to this area either. He's been here before, and a lot of people love him. Most people do. And he was at the Van Cliburn competition. And he was sort of goofing around with some of his friends backstage or maybe in the green room, you know, maybe they were in a break. And he was sort of playing some pop tunes, improvising on pop tunes on the piano. And Van Cliburn himself walks in and he says, wow, you're great at that. You should really market that. And guess what? He did.
He made a career of it.
That don't know who Van Cliburn is, tell us.
Well, Van Cliburn was an incredible pianist, one of the most famous pianists.
A real prodigy.
Wasn't he
too?
He went to Russia, if I remember right.
Yes, he did.
He had a major concert over there.
He absolutely did, many of them.
Yeah.
He was just, he's one of the, you know, there are a few big names in pianists, and he's definitely one of them. So he's just kind of a revered, well-respected musician. And there's a competition in his name that occurs every year. And generally, if you're a Van Cliburn winner, you're going to go on to have a huge career.
Yeah.
And Mac Frampton is going to bring with him his band, which includes several members of the Henry Mancini band.
Oh, wow.
We have Cecil Wells. That's hard for me to say. We were talking about words that were hard to say earlier. That's one for me. Cecil Welsh is a trumpeter. Really incredible. Also, he's bringing Skip Lane. Mm-hmm. And you may not know you know Skip, but you do if you've ever heard the Pink Panther. Mm-hmm. He was the sax player.
That was Henry Mancini. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. He was the quote-unquote voice of the Pink Panther. That's mm-hmm. Skip Lane you hear on all those old recordings.
So the October concert's a good example of how you will feature one performer, often a big-name performer. Uh-huh. What else might be on the schedule?
Well, the third concert is really exciting. It's our Sounds of Christmas. It's a big mm-hmm. tradition for the MSO. We have a big Christmas concert every year. Mm-hmm. And this one is extra special because there's a new musical group brewing in this area. It's called the Murfreesboro Symphony Chorus.
Wow.
Angela Tipps, who is a professor at MTSU, she's going to lead that.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to make their debut at our Christmas concert. We're going to do the first part, the Christmas portion mm-hmm. of Handel's Messiah, which everyone knows the Hallelujah chorus from the Messiah. And mm-hmm. you'll be surprised. There are a lot of other tunes that are very famous, too. We're going to sort of inaugurate the Murfreesboro Symphony Chorus at that concert. We're going to also feature Dina Cankren. She's the a voice faculty member over at MTSU. Dr. Stephen Smith is a voice faculty member at MTSU. Mm-hmm. And one of my great friends, Dr. Gail Shea, she's a faculty member at the Blair School at Vanderbilt. Mm-hmm. She'll be here, and those guys will sing solos from the Messiah, and the chorus will be there to do the chorus.
Well, that'll be a big show. What can we look forward to during the winter and in the spring?
Well, concert four is called Music of the Americas. It features Katherine Jansen. She's a great friend of mine. We were classmates together at Blair. She moved to New York to study voice at the Manhattan School of Music, and she's a singer in New York now, does a lot of work there. Most recently, she was the cunning little vixen in Janacek's Cunning Little Vixen, which I won't say much about that opera, just that it's extremely difficult, and you have to be pretty amazing to be cast in that role. And
Cunning Little Vixen, is that what you said?
The Cunning Little Vixen.
That sounds intriguing, doesn't mm-hmm. it?
Yeah. And that concert is called Music of the Americas. I have music from America, United States, mm-hmm. but we're also going to have music from Latin America. We have a piece from Mexico, a piece from... Villalobos, a piece from Brazil for eight cellos and soprano. And then we're also going to feature Kate. She's going to do a song cycle with a pianist also from Latin America. The American music on that program will be Copeland's Appalachian Spring, which if you know the Shaker hymn, Simple Gifts. Mm-hmm. Simple Gifts is sort of the main theme of that piece. Mm-hmm. And Copeland really brought that. It was a Shaker tune. A Shaker hymn, and he really made that popular again when he composed that piece. We're also going to do Barber's Knoxville, Summer of 1915. It's based on prose by James Agee. It's about growing up in Knoxville in that time.
Knoxville, like in Tennessee?
Knoxville, Tennessee.
Mm, interesting.
That's right.
Mm, interesting. And what's the finale?
The final concert is called MSO Presents Shostakovich 5. We're going to open up with the main title music from Out of Africa, which is extremely beautiful. Then we go on to a piece called The Composer is Dead. And I wish I'd brought a little clip of that, but I didn't. But basically, that is it's a piece. Orchestras play it a lot for kids, but it's really for adults. You know, the humor in that piece is so sophisticated, mm-hmm. and it's really for adults. And when I say humor, it's for narrator and orchestra. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of a piece so adults can get to know better the sections of the orchestra. It's an educational piece, but it's tons and tons of fun. Basically, somebody has killed the composer, and they're going around the orchestra to the various sections trying to figure out who it was.
Who's going to be our narrator?
His name's Kerry Shinbaum, and we did this piece together last season in Huntsville, and he is a hoot. He's an actor. He's a musician. He's a clown. I don't think he's a trained clown, but But yeah. He's a,
what's the date of that last performance?
The last one is on April the 12th. After intermission, we'll do the Fifth Symphony of Shostakovich, which is probably up in my top two or three pieces that I love. So.
Sounds like what we need to do is you're on every other week.
Yeah.
We need to keep the people updated and when the next ones are, because I know that they're not. But if they could start at the very first one, and we're talking about October the 29th, and it's kind of like
27th.
Okay, it's kind of like maybe going to a seminar that you're going to enjoy a great deal, and you learn as you go to each one. Mm-hmm. And I'm planning on trying to make all of them.
If it's humanly possible,
I'm going to be there because I do want to learn, and I do enjoy the music so much.
You know, that last concert also is a good illustration of the hometown connection, because the pre-concert performance will be by Johnny B. and the Balladeers. Ever heard of them?
No.
Never heard of them?
No, but I know who you're talking about.
That's the sound of the Readable Mill.
Yes.
That's John Blankenship and his group.
He is quite talented.
I think they are as thrilled to be part of the program as we are to have them, but they'll be the opening music.
Now, to touch that a little bit more, most people like Brian and me, we don't dress up to go anywhere unless it's to church or to a funeral.
Uh-huh.
All right. What is the normal attire for an individual that's going to go to these concerts? And is it as formal as most people think it is when they see the Met and places like that?
No, it's not. The musicians generally are wearing white tie, which generally consists of white tie and tails. Mm-hmm. What you see on the stage is going to be very formal.
Right.
Now, in the audience, it can really run the gamut. Some people enjoy getting really dressed up, having dinner, coming to the orchestra, and that's great. And I would say the majority of our audience members do dress up somewhat. You know, you see a lot of suits.
Somewhat. I go to all these performances, and how often do you see me in a tie?
Yeah. But also,
I went to the Phantom of the Opera last time, big guys. I mean, that has opera in the title.
Definitely.
And I didn't wear anything close to, but I'd say 3/4 of the people did, and I really felt a little uncomfortable. Should I have felt uncomfortable?
You should not have felt uncomfortable. You should go to enjoy the experience and whatever you're most comfortable in. And I'll tell you, we had a lot of students from MTSU at this concert. I went and spoke to several music appreciation classes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was wandering around the lobby enjoying the pre-concert events, and I saw a lot of those, you know, college kids come in, and some of them were, you know, they were in nice jeans and a shirt, or khakis and a button down shirt, or, you know, there's just a, you know, I probably wouldn't show up in, you know, jean shorts and flip flops.
Oh no.
But you know,
not even if I got an MTSU shirt on.
Well, if you have an MTSU shirt
go
on,
go blue or something like that.
That's a little different story, but you come in whatever you feel comfortable in, and people are just going to be happy you're there. You're not going to be turned away. You're going to make friends.
Yeah. You know? If you're going to enjoy yourself, you need to be comfortable. And especially something you just need to lay back and relax and just listen to the music and close your eyes. I want to let you know that the last part of this show is brought to you by Pertle & Howard & Automotive, 2006 North Main Street in Shebaville, Tennessee. And if you're looking for a Ford, Mercury, Chevrolet, Buick, or GMC, take about a 20-minute drive down 231 South. It's on your left before you get into downtown Shebaville. Or you can pull them up at PertleHowerton.com, or you can reach them on your phone at 1-800-264-6800, toll-free, and you will have an enjoyable time there. See what their inventory is. I have seen it, and they have some great vehicles over there. In fact, I'd love to leave here right now and go pick one up. But since you have more time than I have, just take a drive to Shevel and just jump in that vehicle and drive it back, and you will be awfully glad you did.
Hi, I'm Dr. Britt Miaton, a cardiologist with St. Thomas Heart at Middle Tennessee Medical Center. Did you know that St. Thomas Heart is Middle Tennessee's number one rated heart program? At MTMC, we offer comprehensive services for the treatment and prevention of heart disease. From early diagnosis to minimally invasive surgical procedures, St. Thomas Heart at MTMC offers you heart care close to home. For information, visit heartasone.com or call 867-5028.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Fall in love with Murfreesboro's newest Italian restaurant, Gondolier Italian Restaurant and Pizza, coming soon on Broad in the Old Shoney's location. Enjoy 79 menu items under $6.99, pizza, salad, subs, pita wraps, calzones, strombolis. With a menu like Gondolier's, there's something for everyone. Gondolier Italian Restaurant and Pizza, coming soon on Broad in the Old Shoney's location.
Now more of The Truman Show with Truman Jones on WGNS AM and FM.
And Joseph, that's our local people singing.
Local people. It is.
Goodness gracious.
Stephen Smith, Dina Cankren from the music faculty of MTSU. They were singing, what were those roles? Raul and Christine from Phantom of the Opera. That was September of 2010.
I've seen that movie about five times. I saw it at the theater. And then I bought it
silent,
and took it home.
Didn't it? You first saw it as a silent, didn't you?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
In fact, I can't remember who it was, but I can sure see the face.
That would have been a very different experience.
I don't remember too much music in that
Not
particular
Not the silent,
one.
No.
Tell me again, this first one that's coming up, what is the time, what is the date, I mean, as far as... And, of course, we know it's going to be over at the First Methodist Church.
Right.
Thompson Lane.
On Thompson Lane.
Our pre-concert activities start at 6:45. The concert starts at 7:30. It's Mac Frampton. He's bringing his band, which includes Skip Lane, Cecil Welsh, and others. Also, there will be members of the Murfreesboro Symphony, about 12, so about 20 musicians in all. Will be up there on the stage.
Now, they won't have the full orchestra there that night.
It won't be the full orchestra, but it'll be a large group backing up Mac. It'll be popular masterpieces by Mancini, John Williams, Disney, many more. And it's going to be really exciting. Starts at 7:30. It's on October the 27th with pre-concert activities at 6:45.
Now, where do people get their tickets?
Well, they can do several things. Okay. We really anticipate this concert to be a big seller, so they're probably going to want to get their tickets in advance. They can call our office, and that number is 898-1862. They can check us out at MurfreesboroSymphony.com for more information about tickets. And if you get to the concert day and you don't have your ticket yet, just come on over to the church. I'm sure we'll be able to sell you a ticket.
Now, are these going to be numbered seats where they can go in and sit up front if they want to? Do they have to get there earlier? How do you work that out, the seating arrangements?
Well, the majority of our concerts, the seating is broken into three different categories. You can get a ticket for $10, for $25, or for $40. Now, the Mac Frampton, it's different. I think there are no $10 tickets available. It's a fundraiser for the MSO. So we need a lot of people to come out.
That's a biggie.
Buy tickets for that one.
So you continue on with the other four.
Exactly. So we can be around for another 30 years. You know, ticket prices really are about 30% of a symphony orchestra's ticket sales. I mean, are about 30% of an orchestra's revenue. We desperately need grants and also donors, just supporters from the community. You know, we're here to make the quality of life in Murfreesboro better for everybody. And we really need the people in Murfreesboro and Rutherford County to get behind us and support us.
I was noticing you have a lot of business and a lot of corporate sponsors here. But something that I know is really a costly venture for you. I mean, there's a lot that you have to take care of.
People might be surprised how much one concert takes to put on.
Well, Joe, you're in charge of the music, obviously, but who handles all that background? Who are the people involved?
You know, we have a wonderful staff down at the Murfreesboro Symphony, Fran, Ellen, Jeff. But I really have to extend a huge thank you to the board of directors, all the members of the board, especially Bertie Ann Donald, the president of the board. You know, she's a great people wrangler. And she does a really great job to keep things running smoothly. And I know she won't be president forever, but boy, we sure are happy to have her while she's here and willing to do the hard work.
You're very fortunate to have her because she's a Kittrell girl, kind of like a Kittrell girl. She's from over in that area.
Well, yeah, so her last name is the same family that Donald's Chapel, which is my little home community.
Yeah,
she's a hometown girl. Now, who is it that putting together these pre-program part of the show?
I think you know her, Greg. She's a really great lady. Her last name's Tucker, too. I think it's your wife, Mintriette.
Yeah.
And, boy, she's just taking this and just run with it. And
how in the world do you slow her down, Greg?
You don't.
She's everywhere.
You don't. You pant and try to keep up.
She's, you know, we had more than twice the audience at our first concert than normal for just a normal concert that's not Christmas. And so many of those people were there from the hard work she put in on those pre-concert lectures.
I want to see a full house or a full church that night.
Me too. We need 1,500 people for Mac Frampton. We need 1,500 people for Christmas. You know, with a community the size of Murfreesboro. How many people would you say are here? About
265,000 in the county.
Rutherford County, mm-hmm. Yeah.
So think about if even 1% of the population came to check out the orchestra.
You know, that would be a great way to celebrate the bicentennial for Murfreesboro.
Oh, that's right.
But you know, it really would. As such a solid and class community that we've had here in the rich heritage, I mean, bring in something like that. And classical music fits right in the scope with Murfreesboro Bicentennial. And I think the mayor should run with that. What do you think, Greg?
Well, you know, that April concert will be in the month exactly 200 years after they decided where the new town was going to be. So maybe we can tie that together.
That's amazing.
You know, the Murfreesboro Symphony, there's free parking.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the residents...
Valet parking?
No valet, but parking lot's not that big. Mm. You know, most of the residents of the area wouldn't even have to get on the interstate. Mm. You know, it's easy to get to Thompson Lane.
Yes, it is.
You know... the First United Methodist Church is a beautiful space. Mm-hmm. There's so many reasons to come out and check out your own local backyard orchestra. So I hope your listeners will do it.
You know, the one thing you haven't mentioned is the 4th of July concerts, which for 30 years, I guess, have been done by the Murfreesboro Symphony Orchestra.
So a lot of people have seen and heard
the orchestra and might not have realized that it was a year-round thing.
You're not going to shoot fireworks in the church, are you?
We might.
Well, we'll ask and see.
Well, it's been a great show.
What a pleasure.
Joseph, it's been my pleasure, believe me. And the people out in the audience, I know they love it. And I hope most of you, or all of you, head out to the First Methodist Church on Thompson Lane and take part October the, what was it, the 27th?
Uh-huh.
And it starts at 7:30.
Starts at 7:30.
And I guess you get there early. And will you have any preludes or anything going on?
Yeah, we have the pre-concert activity. Pre-concert, they're calling them activities, right? Mm-hmm. The artists
program.
We'll have artists displaying their work in the lobby, and it's for purchase too. It's not just a gal. You know, we're encouraging them to bring things that they feel will. Really sort of strike a chord, no pun intended, with our audience members. And we'll also have musical groups in the lobby before the concert starts.
Can you buy all your tickets for all five concerts?
Yes, you can. We do offer season tickets, and now that one of those concerts is over, you can buy them at a prorated price.
Oh, wow.
And again, more information about season tickets at MurfreesboroSymphony.com, or you can call our office and talk to Fran. That's 898-1862. If she's not there, you can just leave a message. She'll call you back. But as a season ticket holder, it's important to know, you know, you could come to all the concerts for $10 each. But, you know, as a season ticket holder, you know deep down that if it wasn't for you, we wouldn't be here.
Right.
You know, we have post-concert receptions that our season ticket holders are invited to. They can come. Socialize with the musicians, socialize with the other patrons and the guest artists. And, you know, that's only one of the many perks. But I think the biggest perk of being a season ticket holder is knowing that your support makes it possible for us to do what we do.
You also get to sit down front.
That's right.
Hey, everybody, listen to that. You want to take part in the perks. Great show. I'm sorry that it's over with because I believe we could stay here another three or four hours. But I know Brian is—he's getting antsy over there. I've already gone past the time limit I was supposed to, but it was worth it. We'll see you guys tomorrow at 2 o'clock, and we're looking forward to another great show tomorrow.